Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the latest episode of the Red Men Weekly podcast. I'm Steve Ho, and I'm about to bring you the best clips from all of our Red Men Plus content from the last week or so. Say it every week, these shows are available over on redmenplus.com in video or podcast forms in full. And we've got a special offer running for you right now. If you sign up over at redmenplus.com as a monthly captain, use the code weekly, WEEKLY, when you do so, and you'll get 50% off your first 2 months. So if you want to go and check it out and see what all the fuss is about, and do it for half price for a couple of months and see if it's for you, or if it isn't, then yeah, redmenplus.com, use the code weekly when you sign up as a monthly captain, and you'll get 50% off those first 2 months. Right then, let's make a start on the clips then. Let's start with the Biased Football Podcast. You've got Paul, you've got Chris, you've got Chloe, and you've got Dan, and they had a big in-depth chat about Manchester United and the proposed takeover, or lack thereof, surrounding Man United and the Glazers.
This is where I think it's interesting, because Ratcliffe is rich enough to be able to do it all, but it's not Ratcliffe, it's his company, Ineos. That's the difference there, is that Ineos Sports Group is different to Ineos, the people who sell and make and made Ratcliffe is absolute billions. Ineos, the sports group, Nice, would you say he's done a fantastic job at Nice? Anyone heard of where Nice are in Europe?
Steady
job. They've got a ram.
Right. They're not fucking pulling up trees in Europe, are they? Let's be honest. Ineos Grenadiers, the cycling team, which they've had for a few years now, has absolutely bombed since they took over from Team Sky. They've got all these things, like won the Tour de France this many times and all that. They were a sponsor at the time of those things. They weren't the guys running the team. The cycling stuff is all off the back of GB cycling and all that type of stuff, and I'm not sure that's got better in the last few years. Everything they've kind of touched hasn't really gotten any better is Ineos. They are a sponsor, I think, for Mercedes in F1, who the last 2 years haven't really pulled up trees either, falling well behind Red Bull and all that type of stuff. So Ineos, the sports group, haven't really done anything of note that I know of anyway in the sports that I watch.
The thing, someone said to me, it was earlier on last year, when mid Liverpool's takeover talk, and the only person who's ever talked to me in person about like Liverpool's takeover and my stance on being owned by a nation, he said, "You didn't want Qatar, did you?" No. Well, when United get them. I said, well, look, they're going to have more money than us. United have always had more money than Liverpool. United's issue is not the money that they bring in, it's how they spend it. And so at least if they've got, and you're right, this depends on how good they are at what they choose to do. And it's the thing, they've got to go and get in a good managing director and a good CEO, and they've got to get a good director of football, and they've got to get all those people who sit between ownership level and manager, and they can get all that right, and the manager might not be right. And it's not going to change the fact that they spent £80 million on a guy who'd only ever scored 8 goals in a top European league prior to that.
Harry Maguire.
You know, they've got all these issues still to resolve. But if they get the people running the football club right, they can definitely, they can change it
around.
And
then they'll be 10 years behind Manchester City.
Yeah, of course. So they've got a long road to go. It's not going to fix, none of this was ever going to fix them overnight, by the way, because there's too many things fundamentally wrong with that team. They might be able to get a short-term bounce here and there, but to actually get Manchester United back to what is expected from Manchester United, that is a road, that is a long process, and it's not just about buying Kylian Mbappe. It's not just about getting Harry Maguire out the way. They've got to build a more competitive squad that's got the ability to actually generate funds a little bit within itself as well. They've got to buy players who've got room for progression. They've got to stop spunking endless amounts of money on footballers who don't pull in the right direction for the football club. It were just names because that's what they were in the 80s. That's what they stopped being under Ferguson. They got the right attitude of footballer in. You need people who can identify who those are. It's not just about spending the money. They get lost in this. So,
and you think about the way
smart people could turn the corner.
You think about the way that City did. Obviously, it was the second takeover that really propelled Manchester City, which people tend to forget about or we don't talk about often enough. But they were hiring Guardiola's people in and around that football club for 2 years before Guardiola arrived.
Yeah.
So they had a clear plan of what was going on and what they wanted to be and all that. Now, Man United, at the moment, you would still question whether they're right for sports washing the project. You know what I mean? Like, they are. I don't know how many trophies they've won recently, but they're a long way away from a league title now, 10 years or whatever it's been. So they're getting to the point where sport washing might be a thing for them, and, you know, their fans and all that type of stuff, bringing in trophies, etc., etc. But I don't think they need the sport washing side of things at Manchester United.
I think the problem is, I thought this a little bit with a couple of different clubs, they've just about gone past the point now where they've got a generation of entitled fans who grew up winning everything and all they want is to get back to that. And you've started to see that with Liverpool's fans, or a lot of people who've come to the club while it's been successful just wanted to stay at that at all costs. So I think they were in an interesting period there where they might have been hailed as like, we'll take being a sports washing project because we just want our Man United back, which is the United that challenges every season. Again, failing to see that having all the money in the world doesn't guarantee that in the Premier League, because it doesn't stop Man City having all of that plus all of the facilities plus all of the players,
the experience, exactly.
So there was ultimately no answer that was going to fix them. But it would have been interesting to see how their fans approached it. Their core fan base, the core, you know, Manc fan base that have been there forever and ever, might not have got on with it. But they've got so many fans that it would have in itself caused a division in the ranks. Are they too big to be sports offers? I'd like to hope so, but it just takes a couple of big. I wish it was Ronaldo. You know, they signed Cristiano Ronaldo, who was well past it at that point, and all of a sudden the Harry Potter scars disappeared, didn't they? Mm-hmm. Because they've signed Ronaldo and they've won the transfer market and it all goes quiet for a bit. This is a new potential failure creeping up on them, because, you know, there's new people, they have to give them time. It's like getting a new manager in.
What could you imagine, like, let's take it from where we are today to a year's time, 25% of the club's been sold, they're running the sports operations, they get worse. What the hell do the Man United fans think at this point?
They're still blaming the Glazers at that point. Gary Neville certainly was still, but because they're sticking around, that's the big problem here, is the fact that the Glazers aren't going. And you sort of both alluded to the fans. I think 99, I don't want to speak on behalf of them, but I imagine a lot of Manchester United fans, a strong contingent, would have just wanted the Glazers out at all costs, and they're not getting it.
Yeah.
And that's why they're so fuming. Because, albeit Jim Ratcliffe wants the sporting decisions, and that's probably better for the long term and indeed the short term of the football club, he's already spoken about the main priority being Old Trafford. He wants to take that up to 90,000, and he's saying all the right things because he's heard
the roof first.
Yeah, well, he's heard the dissenting voices. You can't ignore him because everyone's heard them. So he is saying the right things. He's probably getting them on side, but niggling away at them, all of them, is the fact that the Glazers aren't going. And that's what this all boils. That's why Qatar, regardless of the money, was the better option, because that was 100% Glazers out, done.
So if he owns 25% of it, like, is he okay with just throwing all this money in instead of the Glazers doing it? That's my question. How much does he earn back?
But if there's a pathway to follow ownership, exactly, yeah, then it's the same difference as owning it now.
It happens quite regular, that.
Yeah, you're kind of almost deferring it. You own it, but you don't own it on paper, you own it in theory over a number of years, if they've got a plan to increase that share ownership every few years, it makes kind of no odds. I just want to get to Gary Neville's.
Thesis.
Yeah, he said the news last night of the Qatari withdrawal leaves Man United on the brink of a minority investment. Can this really work, and what impact will it have on a struggling organisation? It's worth setting out my non-negotiables on a takeover of Manchester United that I made over a year ago.
Can I just say something? When I looked at this on Twitter, I don't have a clue what he says here, so I'm going to sit in and brace myself. But do you know that meme where it's like, I'm not reading that, but I'm happy for you, or I'm sad that my response. I was not reading all of that.
So, is non-negotiables...
Why didn't you put this out when Gerard Houllier got brought in as a joint manager with Roy Evans, by the way?
Number one, he wants a new sporting project.
Okay.
Number two, a new or redeveloped Old Trafford. Three, a new training ground.
Wait, what's number one? Is this what he's saying?
Yeah.
So what does he want? What
horse racing?
Is that what he wants? He wants a Manchester United wind surfing club. Like, what the fuck's in hell? What's he asking for with number one?
They're just words, then.
They are.
It's the first one. Make it make sense to me.
The number one. I'm not saying he's ranked these in order, but like, I know what he's trying to say.
A strong start.
He's trying to say that he wants like a clear vision of what the direction of travel for Manchester United. Now, that should be pretty fucking obvious, by the way. We want Manchester United to be competitive at the top end of football, to challenge for titles and European titles. But I mean, so maybe that should be obvious. You shouldn't need that to be a non-negotiable. But then
I'm still just putting it out there. I'd like the Man United windsurfing club.
Yeah. Man United Crown Green Bowls Association.
Yeah.
Nice.
Number four, full redevelopment of the surrounding land to create a Manchester United world and an exciting fan experience.
Oh, he wants roller coasters. I'm on it.
Yeah.
Dan wouldn't be anywhere near that.
Isn't support of Manchester United a bit of a shit roller coaster at the moment, anyway?
Absolutely. Five, pay off the debt and stop taking dividends until the above is done. I'm adding a sixth due to events in the last 2 to 3 years. The club requires leadership that is statesmanlike on major issues that enables a fairer, more inclusive and diverse game. Leadership that builds a positive environment and culture whilst adhering to the club's values and principles, and one that is willing to make tough decisions to prevent an erosion in the club's public image. It doesn't feel like that one's as well developed as the others. And what I mean by that is, it's not an elevator pitch. That is a thesis in and of itself. All of which sounds great and is fundamentally not wrong, because you want, you know, with all that more inclusive, diverse game, absolutely. But like, how do you define a statesman-like leadership?
I feel like number seven is, I will be happy to do this role for you. Is that what the end of this says?
Yeah. What he's saying is, give me some more room to build my hotel.
Some more attractions around it,
and get me involved. Get me involved in the doing of it all. But then again, you know, it's a Salford good.
No, they're not. Actually, they're struggling. Actually, I think they're not the bottom, but they must near the bottom.
It's the ownership structure there.
Yeah. Wait, it's not even him, is it? Is it Peter Lim, the guy who pumps money into them? I think one of his stipulations is actually if Man United need to loan at least two footballs to Salford every season.
Okay,
that was one of his other ones.
Yeah. How does a minority stakeholder possibly impact the club to achieve the above? Can a minority shareholder have any impact on the above? It leaves more questions than answers. My preference is, and always will be now, for a Glazer family full exit. They have overstayed their welcome in Manchester, yet seem oblivious to this fact. There is much up in the air, but I threw down the following questions I'm sure fans would like answering. There will be lots more, but here's a starter for 16.
I don't think "starter for 16" was the phrase.
No, it wasn't.
I'm sorry, how much has he paid
for starter
for
16? How much has he paid for Twitter Blue? Because I'm pretty sure Redman every year don't get that amount of characters.
You
do,
just don't need them.
No, Dan started putting this out, I'd have a severe, I would have question marks over Dan's ability to use social media if he needed this many words. Come on guys, we've got 16 to get through here. What does the distribution of funds look like? Is all the cash being taken out of the club?
I don't know what it looks like, but it sounds like this.
To which Glazers are going, or is it a family dilution? Because all of the individual Glazers own a different percentage of the shares of this as well, by the way. How does it impact the stock exchange shareholders? Does the executive stay the same? Does the sporting side stay the same above the manager? Who within the board has sporting control? Are the future dilution clauses with the Glazer family in any deal you do as a minority share? Jesus Christ. We maxed out on the credit card and debt. How is this deal going to change the capital
United
structure?
Maxed the credit card out. Yeah.
Oh. How does this change the capital structure and financial issues? Is any further debt being placed on the club? Is any debt being paid off? How does this deal impact the board composition? How does a minority shareholder impact the negative culture within the entire organisation? Old Trafford is tired and in need of significant redevelopment. How does this deal resolve this issue? Will this deal allow the development of this training ground to its required standard? Old Trafford requires significant investment on its surrounding land. Does the deal impact this requirement positively, or does it leave it as a concrete wasteland? 16. How does a minority shareholder stop cultural decline across a whole organisation if the people who have overseen this decline still have a majority shareholding anyway?
I'm happy I didn't spend 30 minutes on my Saturday night.
I feel tired.
Go to bed, Gary.
Jamie Carragher, though, tweeted the paragraph that is his favourite. Was it's worth setting out my non-negotiables on a takeover of Manchester United that I made over a year ago. He said there's also a few other crackers in there as well.
There's
nothing like making a scene. He just points, and then one of your mates comes in and goes, What's he doing there?
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Cheers to the team on that one. Next up then, it's Journo Inside Time. It was me and it was Neil Jones, and we had a chat about Andy Robertson, his injury, and what Liverpool might do in his absence.
Move on then to the main points of this show, really. Obviously, Andy Robertson got injured a few days ago. Everyone's probably seen the pictures. He limped off against Spain, wasn't it, with a shoulder injury. A controversial game as well, where Scotland, in the end, it's worked out okay for them. They still qualify, but it was a very controversial game. So we went off, obviously, shoulder. We think it was a dislocation. I think that's what everyone's kind of assessed what it has. What do you know about this one? What's the latest on the Robertson situation?
Yeah, there's not been any update from Liverpool's end. Obviously, they were back. I think the players were back in yesterday, so obviously they'll have a week. Well, the ones who aren't on international duty, they'll have a week building up, and there's been a few that have obviously been in during the break. Cody Gakpo, I think one of those, fingers crossed on his fitness ahead of the weekend. But Robertson, yeah, it'll be looked at in depth. I mean, it's not good, is it? You know, he's gone off. I mean, we've had shoulder injuries with Liverpool players before, haven't we? Obviously, famously. And they're not quick. I mean, in fairness to Salah, I think Salah made quite a miraculous recovery, didn't he? I think he was back playing maybe within a couple of weeks with the World Cup.
He was severely hampered, wasn't he?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, maybe he wouldn't have been if it hadn't been a World Cup. But, you know, I don't think Liverpool's need for Robertson is that great to sort of, you know, tape him up and get him out. But it doesn't look like it's going to be any chance of him playing on Saturday against Everton, at least. You've probably got then, obviously, the midweek game in the Europa League. And then there's a couple of games there that you maybe say, well, okay, if you were going to you know, take your time with a player. Maybe the game's coming up, Nottingham Forest, Luton, Bournemouth in the Cup, Brentford after that, I think. You maybe could, and maybe give him a little bit longer than you normally would. So, yeah, it's poor timing for him with the derby. I mean, and I also think it's poor time for Liverpool with the derby, because I think he's one of those players that I think you want him in a game like that. He's got the sort of the natural intensity to his game. I think he reads the game and what the game needs really well at Anfield. You know, he can inject a little bit of energy and tempo and purpose into things, and you know, he's had some great performances against Everton, obviously, in the past. So I think it is a blow for that. Maybe not the worst time thereafter in terms of having an injury, but yeah, this game certainly is one that Liverpool would rather have Robertson than not.
It's interesting as well, because Steve Clarke was asked about it, and he said, you know, he's gone back to his club, and he was asked if he's going to be fit for the next month's games, obviously the next round of qualifiers in November, and he said if he is, great, but if he's not, then he's not. So he's not even, nobody seems to be like,
that's very Steve Clarke.
There's a lot of cards close to chests here on this kind of thing. Like, shoulders, it's mad, you can be back in a few weeks, it can take months. I suppose Liverpool are just, I don't know what they're waiting for. I'm sure we'll find out in due course, but probably when Jürgen speaks at the latest at the weekend. But
yeah, you'd hope there'd be an update before then.
Yeah,
you know, just from that side. I mean, Robertson, it didn't look good, did it? It looked a sore one, didn't it? Goalkeeper, wasn't it, landing on him, or him landing together? You'd rather it wasn't a dislocation, because obviously that brings its own complications. But if it's a damage to the joint, or you know, it could be a collarbones injury, things like that. Yeah. So fingers crossed, it's on the fortunate side. Liverpool got lucky with, or you know, as lucky as you can get with Gakpo. You know, I think a lot of people feared the worst. Hopefully it's good news on the Robertson front. But yeah, I'd rule him out of Everton unless there's a miraculous turn of events.
Absolutely. Well, not then. Let's have a little look at it, because I know you wrote this on your Substack the other day. What happens next? Obviously, Kostas Tsimikas is the backup left back, and I guess he's the favourite. He actually played left midfield / wing for Greece last night. Luke Chambers is back fit. He obviously got a little bit of minutes in the Leicester League Cup game. Gerald Kwanzaa, perhaps. Joe Gomez. There's a lot to be spoken about here. I mean, If you cost us Tsimikas, I'll get you. I mean, you're probably thinking, well, it's got to be me.
Yeah.
You're like, what, me? If not now, when?
Yeah.
But I don't. Is it just? Do you think it's just nailed on that Kostas just goes straight back into it? I know you hypothesised in your piece that Jürgen does have other options.
He does. I mean, none of them. Tsimikas is the ideal one in terms of the position he plays. Yeah. Obviously, the others aren't ideal. The others are sort of square pegs, aren't they? A little bit. What I would say is, if it isn't Kostas Tsimikas, then he's got to be looking and saying, what's happening here?
Yeah.
You know, I just signed a new contract. He is Andy Robertson's backup.
Yep.
He has been Andy Robertson's backup successfully in the past, you know. So you would expect it to be him. And he's had some games, which is good. He's had 290 minutes. He played left back against Ireland, set a goal up with a lovely cross. Played higher up against the Netherlands on Monday night. Maybe, I don't know whether that was to compensate for his defensive problems, or just to get him fit closer to goal for his attacking abilities. So at least he's in some kind of form, or some kind of rhythm game-wise.
Yeah.
But yeah, he's not impressed, I don't think, in the games that he's played this season. He hasn't featured almost at all in the Premier League, 4 minutes. And that was sort of very late on against Bournemouth. And he came on left wing in that game as well. He came on for Salah and played higher up. So there's obviously, he's got something to prove in terms of his Premier League suitability. I think the last game he started for Liverpool in the league was the final game of last season, and that was a 4-4 draw that, you know, yeah.
Everyone phoned in.
I wrote about it today on my Substack. Said it was a sort of end of term kind of feel. It did feel like that.
I was watching Everton.
So was I, to be fair. Yeah, and I was covering the game.
Yeah.
So he's obviously got something to prove, but he is the backup left back. So it would tally that he would start this game. I mean, he started against Everton last season at Goodison. He came off for Robertson just before the hour mark, so he's got some derby experience. He's obviously a senior player, 27. He's just got a new contract. He's a left back. You would expect him to play. The alternatives, I mean, yeah, Luke Chambers, you mentioned. Luke Chambers is an interesting one, probably a bit too soon for him, but you look, he is potentially a really good bridge between that left back centre back position, because he can play both. There's a good interview with him on the club website this week. I don't know if anyone's seen that, but he talks about his style of defending and how he's not a rash. He doesn't like to dive in. He likes to intercept and read, and you see him play at academy level, and you know wherever he is that kind of player. He stays on his feet a lot. He's a really classy kind of player. Uses the ball well. So he potentially in the future could be one of those players, but I think you're asking a lot to elevate him above Tsimikas at this moment in time to fill in league games.
You know, that but, can I ask,
sorry, I was going to say, but what it does do potentially is it brings him into the,
I was
the
Europa, say, yeah,
League,
yeah.
Europa League reckoning, and that would be brilliant for him. And Bournemouth, yeah, of course. So it brings him up the pecking order, and puts him in the frame for Toulouse, isn't it, next? And then, and obviously Bournemouth.
Yeah, I was looking at I've got the fixtures here. So yeah, so they play Toulouse on Thursday the 26th. They play Bournemouth on the 1st. They play Toulouse away on the 9th. Now, if Andy Robertson is a month, and you're saying to Costas can't play six games in that short amount of time, it'd be a risk.
It would be a risk.
Do you think Luke Chambers would be ready? Because you've seen a lot more of him than I have to go to lose at home, Bournemouth away, to lose away. Do you think he's
well? I think you'd say he'd be ready for to lose at home, and you see how he goes. You know, in that sense, you know, he's a good player. Look, he played at Anfield start of last season. He played against Strasbourg, was it Strasbourg at Anfield in that friendly. And he actually played really well, but he made a couple of mistakes in the game, and they scored from them. And you know, people maybe had an impression of, he's not ready. Actually, I thought he played pretty well. He got caught out with a couple of passes or whatever it was. I think he's ready to play if needed in a game like that, whether it's Toulouse, whether it's Bournemouth, whether it's both. But you won't know until you're given the opportunity. And I think, you're right. It would be probably, it wouldn't make a lot of sense if, let's say, Robertson was out until the next international break. Let's just, you know, that's, okay, that's worst case scenario, hopefully. You don't want Tsimikas playing every single game. You want to be able to keep him fresh and keep him sort of ready to go for the weekend games. So yeah, it does move him into that position. The others, obviously, you mentioned, I mean, we've got on the thing, Jurel Kwanzaa, Joe Gomez. I think Joe Gomez is likelier than Jurel Kwanzaa as a left back. I mean, he made his debut for Liverpool as a left back many, many years ago, wasn't it? It was
Brendan Rodgers.
Eight years ago. Yeah, Brendan Rodgers set a goal up for Coutinho. I say set a goal up. Coutinho did bang it in from 35 yards.
They all count.
Yeah, three fantasy points, definitely. Yeah. But Joe Gomez makes sense from a tactical point of view. If your whole game is built around that sort of tilt, if you like, of the defence, and having Trent as the attacking right back and having someone who stays a little bit more, maybe Joe Gomez does make sense. I think Kwanzaa, look, he doesn't look fazed by much, but are you asking him a little bit too much to play him? Not just play in the Premier League, but play out of position in the Premier League or whatever. So you'd say Gomez ahead of them, but I think for now it looks like Tsimikas will play. And I think you have to look whether you like Tsimikas or not, whether you believe it. You know, I've seen mixed comments. I think some people really do like him. Some people think he's not up to much. I have my doubts about him as a long-term player, but he's here. That's what he's here for, isn't it? It was when Robertson can't play, he plays. And I think that'll be the way that Jürgen will go on Saturday. What it does do, it obviously means, and it puts him on, I mean, it might be something he thrives on. It puts him under the spotlight, doesn't it? You know, he's, I'm not saying he's a weak link, but he is someone that you'd look at and say, okay, well, if you were doing a team talk with Sean Dyche, you'd say, well, he doesn't normally play in these kind of games. You know, they've got Dominic Calvert-Lewin in the forward area, so you know what their game plan's going to be. They want to get the ball out wide. They want to get set pieces. They want to get the ball into him. They've got Jack Harrison, who's just made his debut and scored. They've got Dwight McNeil, who obviously plays down there. So you would expect him to be tested in this game. And, you know, could go either way, couldn't it? It could be one that he thrives in, plays well. You know, everyone says, what are you worried about? And it could be one that, we sort of see. That's why we've been a bit worried about him. But hopefully the former.
And it's interesting as well, because I always think this would cost us. And I'm with you, I've never truly made my mind up on him one way or the other. But he is like what you'd probably want as a backup, an experienced international footy player. Like, it's hard to have like 22 all-star superstars. Like, that is the ideal. There are some positions where people are crying out for a seasoned, look at right back, for example, they haven't got one. Mm-hmm. They're playing centre backs or midfield.
If you had a cap, I mean, I don't know how many caps he's got, but he must have, it must be close to 50 caps for Greece, if not more, you know, that he's got. You know, imagine you had
one of those, you know, in every position, you know, you'd be looking at it, and you'd be saying, well, wow, you know, that's some squad, isn't it? So he's...
30, he's got 30, 30, 30, well, 30 games. Yeah, but he hasn't played much.
Yeah, I'd say that's close to 50 if you...
If you're
a liar.
If you're wrong.
Yeah, if you're wrong, yeah. But, you know, listen, he is experienced. He's played the Champions League. Look, he scored. He stepped up in the most pressurised situations going, you know, and took a penalty in an FA Cup final to win it. So, you know, he's not... You're not throwing someone in who's never experienced this kind of thing, i.e. someone like Luke Chambers or Jarrell Kwanzaa even. So, yeah, he's obviously the front runner for this backup position. That's what he's brought to the club for, wasn't it? And he's done it well. You know, he got 6 assists last season. I think he got 6 assists the season before. So he's got good delivery. That what he has got, you know, I've talked a little bit about his negatives or some of the things he maybe doesn't do so well. What he does do is if Liverpool get corners, he puts them into good areas more often than not. He's got good delivery from wide. He is wholehearted, you know, he's quick. So, you know, okay, he might get caught out of position occasionally, but he's got good physical attributes and getting back. So, yeah, he's not, you know, he's not a nobody, is he? You know, he's coming into a game and he's more than capable of performing.
Yeah, absolutely. And we'll wait and see what the Andy Robbo prognosis is. Again, if it just feels like everyone's just keeping this a little bit closed. Usually, you know, by now, it's quite, I don't know, that's a good thing or a bad thing. We'll find out in due course. Don't know. What's your take on that? Because usually, like you guys, are usually this is usually out by now.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And we haven't heard anything, have we, really?
No, I haven't heard anything.
It's been a few days.
I have. Obviously, people have been asking and trying to find out. But yeah, I don't read too much into it. I mean, it happened, obviously, a while out, didn't it? So it was sort of, you know, If you were thinking, well, there might be a chance he can play against Everton, we won't sort of rule him out already, or we don't know. But yeah, you'd expect even just the fact that he's been forced off in a game, such a big game at the time as well. Obviously, I know it worked out like you say, but it was a huge game, and he's the captain of his country. It would have taken something to get him off that pitch that night. So you're thinking, what, 9-10 days after that, probably no chance for Everton. Probably get another week. You know, he wouldn't have played against Toulouse anyway. So, yeah, fingers crossed it's one of those where it's like, it's just an inconvenience for a week or two rather than a month or two.
Hey, everyone, hope you enjoyed that clip from Journo Insights. If you want to check out that entire show right now, either in video or podcast form, head on over to redmenplus.com. If you sign up as a monthly captain and use the promo code Journo, J-O-U-R-N-O, you'll get 50% off your monthly subscription for the first 2 months. So, yeah, go and check out Journo Insights and all the other amazing content over on redmenplus.com. Monthly captain, use the promo code Journo, and I'll see you over there. Thanks to Neil again for that show. Absolute belter. I love doing it each and every week. Hopefully you guys are enjoying it as well. Next up then, expert inside time. You've got the dulcet tones of Mr. Dan Club, and he is joined this week by Zhao. Zhao actually runs the Fluminense for Foreigners social account. So yeah, he watches Fluminense all the time. Big fan of the club. And obviously, Dan was speaking to him about Andre, what he brings to the team. Could he be joining Liverpool in January? And loads, 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 loads more. So yeah, check out what Zhao had to say about the Brazilian international.
And it's a game that's carried a lot of significance. It's been very important for quite some time now in terms of Liverpool as well, because I spoke to lots of different journalists over the summer about Andre, and all of them said Liverpool want Andre, but Liverpool might have to wait because the Copa Libertadores is going on, and Fluminense want their first ever Copa Libertadores, and it's so important to the club and it's important to Andre, and he's happy to stay and to wait and to try and help them win it. And you're right, it's turned out to be a good decision because Fluminense are in the final, November 4th coming up. But the reports have started again about Liverpool wanting Andre. Now, Tim Vickery, a well-known Brazilian expert, knows his stuff on South America. He spoke last week on TalkSport and he said that Liverpool fans will want to watch the central midfielder, Andre. He said he's almost certainly on his way to Anfield. And he said they came in with a big offer in the summer and Flamengo didn't want to sell because of the Copa Libertadores, like we said. So you have been speaking about this quite a lot. Now, one of the things you said to me before chatting was that you believe that Andre's potential is higher than Fabinho's. Now, do you want to tell us a little bit more about that?
Seeing what he can do now at 22 years old, I I didn't think I would see a 22 years old so ready. So he looks like a 16 years old in the body of a 22. He's so much experience, so much wisdom for such a young player. He takes the right decisions on the pitch. As a DM, he rarely gets red cards. He didn't miss a lot of game, and the games he lost for suspension, they happened because of Brazil's new rule about you can't tell bad things about the referees for the referees. So they do a bad job and you can't tell it for the referees. So with Brazil, you will see this year a lot more suspensions for that starting this year. And André got one suspension against Cruzeiro. But for fouls, for repeated fouls, he doesn't really get cards, yellows, reds. He's a good boy.
Yeah, I mean, shouting or complaining about referees, we do that a lot at Liverpool, so he'll fit right in. And even the manager, Jurgen Klopp, isn't the biggest fan of referees, I think it's fair to say. Now, you mentioned there that he's a defensive midfielder, and you mentioned sort of the fact he doesn't get his disciplinary record, we would call it, is very good. What type of defensive midfielder is he? Sort of stylistically, his style, because I've watched bits of him. I watched a couple of games in the summer, Fluminense, and he's got that sort of that nastiness and that physique about him. He's got that physical side, but he's got a lot more to his game as well. His passing's brilliant. He's got vision. He looks like he's a lot more than what we would call a destroyer type. He looks like he's got everything, really.
I regularly call him a constructive destroyer. He has the ball quality of Thiago. He got the physical and the defensiveness of maybe a Fabinho. But he's shorter. He's 176. He's hard to try to put in the box and say he's like this. It's better if you try to explain what he does than explain what plays more close to him, because he's different.
Yeah.
In my opinion, he'll be Brazilian national team starter. It will happen faster than I thought. And maybe because of injury, but there's a chance we can watch him as a starter against Uruguay today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, he certainly developed quickly. And all of that development has been at Fluminense, of course. He came through the academy ranks there. I spoke to Eduardo Oliveira, one of his former coaches at Fluminense. He's been a captain and a leader during his time, like I say, through the youth teams. Can you tell on the pitch? Is that how he plays? You mentioned his age. He's still very young, of course. But is he already showing those sort of qualities, those leadership qualities?
He started being a captain in under 20 team. He was 17 years old. He just got the sixth position. That's what he plays now.
Mm-hmm.
And he was one of the youngest players in the under 20, and he became the captain. He plays such a leader role. He's normally, I gotta think that the captain role is made for, or good defensive players that make a tackle and screen for the players to go, or attacking players that make a good attacking play and tell the rest of the players to go. He's in the middle of that. He'll start the attacking plays, he'll stop the opponents. He's not really he's not the captain of the main team because of Nino. But I think he'd be in that line to become the captain. He's such a leader in the pitch. That's the thing we talked before. He's the 60 years old in the body of 22. So I think he's such a leader and would be great in Liverpool's midfield.
Cheers to Dan and cheers to Joe for that one. And then finally, yes, it's Oppo preview time. The Merseyside derby is nearly up on us. And yes, who better to talk about it than our good friends down at Toffee TV. So Paul and Baz had a big old chat about the derby this weekend. To preview it for you guys.
The game? It's Anfield.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I've spent a decade now with you having the conversation of, oh, you're optimistic, you're blah, 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 blah. Is it just one of them, you know, where at least you've won there now? I mean, no one saw it, but it happened.
We all saw it. We just weren't in the ground.
Nah, I choose not to remember. Well, I mean, yeah, I had to be careful with that logic because technically, therefore, we didn't win the league.
That's on me, yeah. I'm looking at a chair that says champions. Well, did it really happen? No.
If anything, it's going to be, It'll be a shock if Everton are able to do it, but are you looking at what you've got now? McNeil fit, Harrison fit, Calvert-Lewin fit, and you talk about the time and it's a 12:30 kick-off, but aren't necessarily great in those, if it's going to happen?
I don't know. I honestly can't sit here and go, I've got a sneaky little... Because I haven't. Because it's... Listen, I think Everton have won six times at Anfield in my lifetime. So that tells you I shouldn't have any confidence whatsoever. Been quite a few draws and more defeats than I care to remember. Liverpool are a top side, so it's not as if, you know, we're seventh and usually sixth and I can go, we're flying. What I would say is that Everton are better away from home.
Why?
I don't know. I do know because the formation the manager uses with the core off the striker doesn't tend to work at home, or hasn't worked at home in a way it should have done with us. It did against Bournemouth because we all decided to go and press the ball, which I think we've been caught between two styles. We're not expected to have the ball, so everybody know we are a counter attacking team. It's just the way it is.
Yeah.
We struggle when we have the ball, you know. I think Sean Dyche's general, I think there was a stat someone gave me last week that whenever he's won the possession in the last couple of years, he's only ever won the game once. So, you know, it's that kind of thing. So I think Everton are better suited to that. Liverpool will, I imagine, will have 70% of the ball, something like that. But Liverpool always score, and Everton have had one clean sheet all season. So therefore, we would have to, by that reckoning, at least score at least two to win the game, which is a big ask. The weakest part of Liverpool is the defence, in my opinion, looking at it. I think midfield's getting there. I think the forward line is incredible. I don't think there's probably not a better five to choose from. You can say Haaland would get in and people like that, but if you're looking at a collective, I don't think there's a better five than what Liverpool have got. So there's a threat to all of them, and I think Gakpo's back as well, isn't he? Which is great news. so I think all of Liverpool's forward players can get double figures comfortably, and that's going to be an issue for Everton. But
at the weekend as well, Chris.
Maybe not on this one, hopefully, but no, it's going to be a tough game.
Pick me the Everton team.
Well, I think the back four will pick it, even though Ashley Young will play, which, yeah, I mean, it'll be Pickford, I imagine, Ashley Young, Tarkowski, Branthwaite, Michalenko, and then midfield will be... There's an interesting one for midfield because Idrissa Gueye is fit and he wasn't fit against, but in fact, he was starting against Bournemouth and he got injured in the warm-up. The only position I think is up for grabs is whether or not Jack Harrison starts, because what the manager has tended to do is have Gueye, Onana, Decore as a three and James Garner on the right away from home. Mm-hmm. And Liverpool are, although Andy Robertson's out, isn't he? So there's a big track and threat gone down the left. So we may well stick with Harrison and go see if you can get on. So I imagine Tsimikas will play, will he?
Likely.
Yeah, so therefore I imagine Harrison might stay in. If that's the case, he'll use Garner and Onana in the middle, and then it'll be Dominic Calvert-Lewin up front. Off the left will be Dwight McNeil. So that is what I imagine. Q, Dan Juma starting or something. But he tends, there tend not to be too many times where you look at the team sheet and go, oh my God, why has he done, you know, well, I didn't see that coming. You generally know with Sean Dyche what's what.
If Liverpool are going to undo that side, best way to go about it?
Salah, isn't it? It's Salah. Okay. Listen, Michalenko's a good defensive left back. He's nothing going the other way. But how can you, look, Jota, I can pick any of them, couldn't I? Jota, incredible.
Well, Jota will be suspended for that one.
Oh yeah, of course, yeah. So, woo, thank God for that. Oh, who's playing instead? Oh yeah, okay, Darwin Nunes, who's a million miles an hour, right? But it's Mo Salah. I can't look past Mo Salah because he's just incredible. I've watched him at Goodison, and I remember saying to you know, watching him up close, incredible. I think that will be, he will be the danger. But I don't like singling danger men out. You've had people scoring goals who've never, would probably never score a goal. You know, only my biggest thing is Rob Jones never scored in the derby, which was, the, you know, never scored anywhere.
But we've got Joe Gomez for that job.
Well, there you go, days. Joe Gomez. You know, wouldn't surprise me if Joe Gomez got a hat-trick, do you know what I mean? But if I had to choose it, the danger, it will probably be Salah or Nunes.
Okay.
Who would you tell me I'd need to be wary of?
Well, like Sandy Salah's just like,
it's really
wild without saying.
But he's top draw though.
Darwin's fitness will be interesting because he came back just knackered, yeah, from the internationals last time. Apparently he had a bit of cramp again this time around. Okay. But he's been in really good form for Uruguay, so he keeps coming back and leaving in good form and coming back in good form, but you've got to be careful with him at the same time. Gakpo's only just come back to training. Diaz is another one who'll have been away with South America, so that's our, as much as we've got the talent there. Gakpo's not played a match since, it's been what, 2 or 3 weeks since his injury, a couple of weeks at least. You've got Diaz who'll be knackered from internationals, you've got Darwin who'll be knackered from internationals, Salah will be fine, and then it's whether we've got the talent in midfield, whether Gravenberch starts, Szoboszlai will start, it's whether Gravenberch has got it in him to start this one, because he started Elliot last time and then brought him into the game. Who knows?
Are you in any way, shape or form concerned about this game?
No,
there you go.
No, but like, not from a, like, I'm a knobhead about it, like, just if we've got Hughes and Brentford to come, and there's another team that we had a little issue with last season as well, but they're all at home. And you know, I've had Forest, so we lost to Forest away last season. We lost to Brentford, and we'd use the home form is not the issue against teams like that. It's how we go and handle that away from it. We need to go and learn how to win at Goodison Park, because we just don't do that anywhere near.
We need to win. We need to learn to the both of us. If you find the formula, pass it over.
Pass the notes, please.
Cheers to Paul and cheers to Baz for that one. Right, that is it for this week's episode of the Red Men Weekly Podcast. Like I said, if you want to go and watch those shows or listen to them in full in your native podcasting apps, then redmenplus.com is the place to go. Sign up as a monthly captain, use that code weekly, WEEKLY, you'll get 50% off your first 2 monthly payments. So go and give it a go. I'm sure you'll love it, and I'm sure you'll stick around for even more great content between now and the end of the season. Let's hope Liverpool win that derby, and let's get the Reds back to winning ways in the Premier League. We'll be back with another Red Men Weekly next week. See you all then.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.